Whether the subject of the regulation in question was production, consumption, or marketing is therefore not material for purposes of deciding the question of federal power before us. That an activity is of local character may help in a doubtful case to determine whether Congress intended to reach it. The same consideration might help in determining whether, in the absence of congressional action, it would be permissible for the state to exert its power over the subject matter, even though in so doing it to some degree affected interstate commerce. But even if appellee's activity be local, and though it may not be regarded as commerce, it may still, whatever its nature, be reached by Congress if it exerts a substantial economic effect on interstate commerce, and this irrespective of whether such effect is what might at some earlier time have been defined as direct or indirect. The parties have stipulated a summary of the economics of the wheat industry. Commerce among the states in wheat is large and important. Although wheat is raised in every state but one, production in most states is not equal to consumption. 16 states on average have had a surplus of wheat above their own requirements for feed, seed, and food. 32 states and the District of Columbia, where production has been below consumption, have looked to these surplus-producing states for their supply, as well as for wheat for export and carryover. The wheat industry has been a problem industry for some years, largely as a result of increased foreign production and import restrictions. Annual exports of wheat and flour from the United States during the 10-year period ending in 1940 averaged less than 10% of total production, while during the 1920s they averaged more than 25%. The decline in the export trade has left a large surplus in production, which in connection with an abnormally large supply of wheat and other grains in recent years caused congestion in a number of markets, tied up railroad cars, and caused elevators in some instances to turn away grains and railroads to institute embargoes to prevent further congestion. Many countries, both importing and exporting, have sought to modify the impact of the world market conditions on their own economy. Importing countries have taken measures to stimulate production and self-sufficiency. The four large exporting countries of Argentina, Australia, Canada, and the United States have all undertaken various programs for the relief of growers. Such measures have been designed, in part at least, to protect the domestic price received by producers. Such plans have generally evolved towards control by the central government. In the absence of regulation, the price of wheat in the United States would be much affected by world conditions. During 1941, producers who cooperated with the Agricultural Adjustment Program received an average price on the farm of about $1.16 a bushel, as compared with the world market price of 40 cents a bushel. Differences in farming conditions, however, make these benefits mean different things to different wheat growers. There are several large areas of specialization in wheat, and the concentration on this crop reaches 27% of the cropland, and the average harvest runs as high as 155 acres. Except for some use of wheat as stock feed and for seed, the practice is to sell the crop for cash. Wheat from such areas constitutes the bulk of interstate commerce therein. On the other hand, in some New England states, less than 1% of the cropland is devoted to wheat, and the average harvest is less than 5 acres per farm. In 1940, the average percentage of the total wheat production that was sold in each state, as measured by value, ranged from 29% thereof in Wisconsin to 90% in Washington. Except in regions of large-scale production, wheat is usually grown in rotation with other crops, for a nurse crop for grass seeding, and as a cover crop to prevent soil erosion and leaching. Some is sold, some kept for seed, and a percentage of the total production, much larger than in areas of specialization, is consumed on the farm and grown for such purpose. Such farmers, while growing some wheat, may even find the balance of their interest on the consumer's side. The effect of consumption of homegrown wheat on interstate commerce is due to the fact that it constitutes the most variable factor in the disappearance of the wheat crop. Consumption on the farm, where grown, appears to vary in an amount greater than 20% of average production. The total amount of wheat consumed as food varies but relatively little, and use as seed is relatively constant. The maintenance by government regulation of a price for wheat undoubtedly can be accomplished as effectively by sustaining or increasing the demand as by limiting the supply. The effect of the statute before us is to restrict the amount which may be produced for market, and the extent as well to which one may forestall resort to the market by producing to meet his own needs. That Appelli's own contribution to the demand for wheat may be trivial by itself is not enough to remove him from the scope of federal regulation, whereas here his contribution taken together with that of many others similarly situated is far from trivial. It is well established by decisions of this court that the power to regulate commerce includes the power to regulate the prices at which commodities in that commerce are dealt with in practices affecting such prices. One of the primary purposes of the act in question was to increase the market price of wheat, and to that end, to limit the volume thereof that could affect the market. It can hardly be denied that a factor of such volume and variability as home-consumed wheat would have a substantial influence on price and market conditions. This may arise because, being in marketable condition, such wheat overhangs the market, and if induced by rising prices, tends to flow into the market and check price increases. But if we assume that it is never marketed, it supplies a need of the man who grew it, which would otherwise be reflected by purchases in the open market. Homegrown wheat, in this sense, competes with wheat in commerce. The stimulation of commerce is a use of the regulatory function quite as definitely as prohibitions or restrictions thereon. This record leaves us in no doubt that Congress may properly have considered that wheat consumed on the farm where grown, if wholly outside the scheme of regulation, would have a substantial effect in defeating and obstructing its purpose to stimulate trade therein at increased prices. It is said, however, that this act, forcing some farmers into the market to buy what they could provide for themselves, is an unfair promotion of the markets and prices of specializing wheat growers. It is of the essence of regulation that it lays a restraining hand on the self-interest of the regulated, and that advantages from the regulation commonly fall to others. The conflicts of economic interest between the regulated and those who advantage by it are wisely left under our system to resolution by the Congress under its more flexible and responsible legislative process. Such conflicts rarely lend themselves to judicial determination. And with the wisdom, workability, or fairness of the plan of regulation, we have nothing to do. Part 3. The statute is also challenged as a deprivation of property without due process of law, contrary to the Fifth Amendment, because both of its regulatory effect on the appellee and its alleged retroactive effect. The court below sustained the plea on the ground of forbidden retroactivity, or in the alternative that the equities of the case as shown by the record favor the plaintiff. An act of Congress is not to be refused application by the courts as arbitrary and capricious and forbidden by the Due Process Clause merely because it is deemed in a particular case to work an inequitable result. Appellees claim that the act works a deprivation of due process even apart from its allegedly retroactive effect is not persuasive. Control of total supply, upon which the whole statutory plan is based, depends upon control of individual supply. Appellee's claim is not that his quota represented less than a fair share of the national quota, but that the Fifth Amendment requires that he be free from penalty for planting wheat and disposing of his crop as he sees fit. We do not agree. In its effort to control total supply, the government gave the farmer a choice, which was, of course, designed to encourage cooperation and discourage non-cooperation. The farmer who planted within his allotment was, in effect, guaranteed a minimum return much above what his wheat would have brought if sold on a world market basis. Exemption from the applicability of quotas was made in favor of small producers. The farmer who produced in excess of his quota might escape penalty by delivering his wheat to the secretary or by storing it with the privilege of sale without penalty in a later year to fill out his quota, or irrespective of quotas if they are no longer in effect. And he could obtain a loan of 60% of the rate for cooperators, or about 59 cents a bushel, on so much of his wheat as would be subject to penalty if marketed. Finally, he might make other disposition of his wheat subject to the penalty. It is agreed that as the result of the wheat programs, he is able to market his wheat at a price far above any world price based on the natural reaction of supply and demand. We can hardly find a denial of due process in these circumstances, particularly since it is even doubtful that Appellee's burdens under the program outweigh his benefits. It is hardly lack of due process for the government to regulate that which it subsidizes. The amendment of May 26, 1941 is said to be invalidly retroactive in two respects. First, in that it increased the penalty from 15 cents to 49 cents a bushel. Secondly, in that by the new definition of farm marketing excess, it subjected to the penalty wheat that had not theretofore been subject to no penalty at all, that is, wheat not marketed as defined in the Act. It is not to be denied that between seed time and harvest, important changes were made in the Act which affected the desirability and advantage of planting the excess acreage. The law, as it stood when the appellee planted his crop, made the quota for his farm the normal or the actual production of the acreage allotment, whichever was greater, plus any carryover wheat that he could have marketed without penalty in the preceding marketing year. The Act also provided that the farmer who, while quotas were in effect, marketed wheat in excess of the quota for the farm on which it was produced, should be subject to a penalty of 15 cents a bushel on the excess so marketed. Marketing of wheat was defined as including disposition by feeding in any form to poultry or livestock, which, or the products of which, are sold, bartered, or exchanged. The amendment of May 26, 1941, made before the appellee had harvested the growing crop, changed the quota and penalty provisions. The quota for each farm became the actual production of acreage planted to wheat, less the normal or the actual production, whichever was smaller, of any excess acreage. Wheat in excess of this quota, known as the farm marketing excess, and declared by the amendment to be regarded as available for marketing, was subjected to a penalty fixed at 50% of the basic loan rate for cooperators, or 49 cents, instead of the penalty of 15 cents which obtained at the time of planting. At the same time, there was authorized an increase in the amount of the loan which might be made to non-cooperators, such as the appellee, upon wheat, which would be subject to penalty if marketed, from about 34 cents a bushel to about 59 cents. The entire crop was subjected by the amendment to a lien for the payment of the penalty. The penalty provided by the amendment can be postponed or avoided only by storing the farm marketing excess according to regulations promulgated by the Secretary, or by delivering it to him without compensation, and the penalty is incurred and becomes due on threshing. Thus, the penalty was contingent upon an act which Appellee committed not before, but after the enactment of the statute. And had he chosen to cut his excess and cure it or feed it his hay or to reap and feed it with the head and straw together, no penalty would have been demanded. Such manner of consumption is not uncommon. Only when he threshed and thereby made it part of the bulk of wheat overhanging the market did he become subject to penalty. He has made no effort to show that the value of his excess wheat consumed without threshing was less than it would have been had it been threshed while subject to the statutory provisions in force at the time of planting. Concurrently with the increase in the amount of the penalty, Congress authorized a substantial increase in the amount of the loan which might be made to cooperators on stored farm marketing excess wheat. That Appellee is the worse off for the aggregate of this legislation does not appear. It only appears that if he could get all that the government gives and do nothing that the government asks, he would be better off than this law allows. To deny him this is not to deny him due process of law. Reversed.